A very fresh Chipotle is a beautiful thing.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_beeble. We are back with something that I've done, I don't know, maybe the last 3 or 4 years, doing a season preview for all 30 teams in the NBA. Today is the first one of those for the 2018-19 season. We're going to be talking Indiana Pacers. So to talk everything Indiana Pacers, I brought on one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast, and that is Tony East. Tony, welcome to the show, which I believe for the first time on Locked On Fantasy Basketball.
First time doing the season preview. Yeah, I'm excited to do this.
It's going to be exciting. We've got lots to talk about with this Pacers team. Tony, Michael Bolton's waiting.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's talk about this. It's the first time on this show, mate. You've got to get ready for all these weird and wacky audio drops that I do put into the show from time to time. I don't have any Pacers-specific player ones, so you're going to miss out on a few of them there. But we are here to talk about this Indiana Pacers team who surprised many in the NBA and with some of the fantasy performances we saw come from this team last season. Some real interesting stuff. Now, I'm going to start with a few of the basics we're going to go through with the hosts on these shows. Let's start with the projected record for this team. Tony, you had them at a 48-34 record for this season. And out of all the show hosts that I've surveyed so far for the podcast, I think you're the one who's closest to the actual over-under, which is 47.5 wins. You've gone just marginally over. How much of a variation do you think there is with this team who took a big step forward last season?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see because I think there is a decent amount of variation. Last year's 48 wins, you know, came with a lot of really good clutch play combined with some crazy good injury luck. I wouldn't say great, but good. Only five teams had five or more guys play 2,000 minutes. The Pacers were one of those teams combined with 1,800 from Sabonis and about 1,600 from I can't remember who else. They had a lot of health last year. That's not something you can rely on year in, year out. And that's why I peg them a little lower than a lot of people who just straight up look at their improvements. And I stick with them winning the same number of games as last year. But if they are healthy, I think they're going to be higher than 48 because, you know, Lance is one of the worst rotation players in the NBA. He is now gone and replaced with Tyreek Evans, who was a very, very good player last year and drastically improves their bench. And then Kylo Quinn is substantially better than Al Jefferson, who now plays in China. And Doug McDermott is better than the nobody they had playing backup three for majority of the year. So, you know, I think they did get a better bench, which should lend to an improved record. But at the same time, they were very healthy last year. And if the health, you know, becomes more normal, then you could see them be about the same as last year. But I think the variance comes in health because, you know, Oladipo played the second most games he's played of his career last year. If he misses any more time, they're in trouble. Tyreek could miss a lot of games. He averages like under 60 games played a year, I believe, when I looked up his totals for his career. And, you know, just with things like that, you never know what's going to happen. Three of their starters are 30 or older. They could get worse. I think there is quite a bit of variance, but I think, if you average it all out, I think they're going to be about the same in terms of record as last year.
Now, Tony, quickly, before we go on to talk a little bit more Pacers, the Locked On Network is expanding with college shows. I have mentioned this before, but we're going to be starting this in the next couple of weeks. Launching soon, we're going to have shows covering Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida in the SEC. We're going to have Oklahoma and Baylor coming from the Big 12, Ohio State and Penn State in the Big 10, and lastly, Oregon in the Pac-12, and there'll be more teams to come after that. So make sure you are checking out the Locked On Podcast Network for all of the college shows that we are going to have coming up really, really shortly. Now, Tony, I asked all the hosts to provide me answers to many questions, and one of the questions that I did ask people was, who is the projected leading scorer on this team? I don't think there's really any question with this squad as to who that's going to be. You answered Victor Oladipo, who, of course, had a career year, was the NBA's most improved player. He was a first-time All-Star, and he averaged over 23 points per game last season. on a true shooting of approaching 58%, which of course is insanely efficient, a usage rate of 30% as well. As you did mention, the bench has been strengthened, so there is a little bit more depth on this team. So while it is pretty clear that Oladipo is going to be the leading scorer on this team, do you think that perhaps he scores maybe a little bit less than last season? Does he take a step forward in his scoring? Where does it go in terms of how he uses the ball? Will that usage drop with the addition of Tyreek on this team?
I think it ultimately is going to stay, his scoring average is going to stay about the same, because a decent amount of his scoring comes from his good defense. He gets a lot of transition opportunities for himself with the league-leading steals number. He just hounds his matchup, forces the ball away, and that gets him a lot of his scoring. At the same time, Tyreek helps with his biggest flaw, which is getting through double teams. I think now if he has a safety valve, that just will decrease his turnovers, aka ipso facto giving the team more possessions for him to score. But at the same time, I think, Tyreek can score on his own, which will take away some possessions as well. So, again, with the record, I think there is a balance there to be struck. And I think, assuming he shoots the same percentage from a lot of places, I think that he'll finish about the same. But I think he could shoot better from the free throw line. He has shot better than he did last year before. I think he could shoot a little better from three. He's improved his three-point percentage every season of his career. So if he can do, if that trend continues, he can only go up. He was finally above average for the first time of his career last year. And at the rim, even a little bit, you can always get better shooting at the rim. I think he was at 50-something percent at the rim. If he can get that number up to 60 without improving his attempts at all, I mean, that could just boom his scoring a little better too. So there's just a few things that could get him a little better, but I think overall it's going to stay about the same, and I don't think he projects to, take any more shots than he did last year.
Yeah, I've got him projected at pretty much the same scoring level for this season, maybe dropping by a point per game. But in that range, of course, there's quite a bit of variability in what he does there. The steals and the defensive numbers coming from a guard were particularly impressive for Oladipo last season for fantasy. He ended up last season as the 10th overall ranked player, which I don't think anybody was able to predict. I think he'll be in that sort of range, maybe not exactly that high for this coming season, but should be similar in that range. It's not like his playing time's going anywhere or anything along those lines. It's not like he was, his value was predicated on unsustainably hot shooting or on crazy high assist numbers that are going to be reduced or anything like that. So what we see from Oladipo, again, still heading into his prime at 26 years of age, you've got plenty of good years ahead of him. It's going to be another season of hopeful success for Oladipo. And I think one of the good things about what Vic did last season, Tony, is he came out early on and he surprised us. But it wasn't like teams then said, oh man, Oladipo's this next level player. We've really got to start shutting down on him. And his performance didn't tail off over the season. It kept pretty consistent, even as that attention really did start to focus on him as the season went on.
Yeah, he found a way to score from a lot of levels. It's been said a lot about how the Pacers are such a good mid-range shooting team. I think that makes it harder for teams to zone in on one guy because the Pacers aren't afraid to shoot from pretty much all areas of the court. It's when you're a three-level scorer like Oladipo, you can't guard him a specific way to tailor him to a shot that he's not as good at. I mean, you can try to force him to those mid-rangers that are statistically the least efficient basketball shot, but he's good at them, and he's so fast that once he gets going downhill towards the basket, he'll just burn you. So he's really hard to stop in any situation. So even when teams do focus on him, he tends to be okay. Again, the problem I said earlier was that he struggles with those double teams, but now with Tyreek and even Collison still spacing the floor as well as he does, I think that problem will mitigate a lot of itself. So, I think you're right. A lot to look forward to that'll be good for him, and I think he's going to be about the same shooting percentages and scoring as last year.
In terms of injuries on this team, there's nothing we really need to pay too much attention to. As you said, they were relatively healthy last season. No real situations heading into the off-season for guys to be worried about. So I don't really need to worry about guys returning from injury in any sort of situation there. Now, Tony, again, one of the questions I ask all the hosts is, who do you think is going to be the breakout player? Of course, you cheated and gave me two answers there, but I'm going to focus on one of the answers that you gave me. And that was a guy who many in the fantasy community were absolutely livid with last season. They were pissed. They were calling him all sorts of names under the sun, which of course I don't condone at all, and that is Miles Turner. There was a big opportunity for Turner last season. Paul George was gone. Turner is going to be the face of this franchise. He is going to be the number one guy, the 1A or the 1B in terms of scoring, the new option here. But in fact, his usage rate went down this coming season. We saw him struggle with playing time at points of the season with Domantas Sabonis taking some of that away. He ended the season on an absolutely horrid note, regular season, of course, where he could barely even score in double digits. And in fact, in many games, he didn't. He started off the season with a bang, Tony. Huge game to begin the year. 20 points, 4 blocks, looked great, suffered a concussion. And I posit this idea quite often that sort of left him not wanting, but it did seem to impact him for the rest of the season after that first game where he did come out and he was bang on in that first contest and then really struggled moving forward. Why do you think that Miles could be looking at a breakout season this coming year as he heads into his fourth season? And what's going to be different this season as opposed to last season?
Two things. One is what he's been working on in the summer are a lot of the things you want him to be better at. Ball handling and just overall strength. And I think a lot of his problem on offense is the usage went down, like you said. Some of that was because Oladipo got awesome, but some of that was because, you know, Turner's not great in the post that much, but his strength could really help him there. You know, he won't get the ball ripped away. He can go to another move that isn't just a post fadeaway. And I think as a result of that, he's going to get more touches in general. And I think, you know, spaced out, you know, there's a video circulating on Twitter of him draining these off the dribble threes, which hopefully he takes none of those in the game. But the key takeaway from that is his ball handling looks a lot smoother. And you know, there's just more reasons to give him the ball would be great. And I think, like you said, the concussion really changed his whole season because the team learned very quickly that Oladipo was the guy who should have the ball, not Turner. And if you remember from the beginning of the season, Sabonis would go like 8 of 8 from the field, yep, and then 9 of 9 from the field, and then 8 of 9 from the field. You know, he started off looking really great too. So they were just toying a lot with center rotations and lineups, and he never really got a rhythm. And you could tell games where Turner was confident, you know, he would just let it fly, and it always went better for him. And I think that they're going to make a focus on making that a thing for him this year just because it goes better for him when they feed him. I'm trying to find this stat, but I'm struggling to find it. But in games where he here it is. I found it. So in games where he attempted 12 or more shots last year, he averaged 19 points a game on 52% shooting and 47% shooting from deep. So when they get him involved, you know, he really does thrive. And I think that they're going to make that more of a focus this year just because they need to, A, figure out what's going on in the center spot, and B, he just looks prime for a breakout with all the work he's been putting in the offseason. So there's a lot of evidence pointing to him having a better year, but I understand why people are afraid after last year.
Last season, we thought he could potentially be a top 20, top 25 type of player. He ended up as the 69th ranked player.
Giggity!
For the season, which obviously disappointed many different people. Is another one of those sound drops, mate. You just, there's so many of them. I've got this whole board in front of me here with plenty of different sounds. Now, one thing that's not going away with Turner is his ability to block shots. He's going to be able to do that, but he does have a problem with rebounding. The rebounding numbers are low, and I don't think, you know, maybe that strength that you've been talking about and the workouts are going to improve it, but that is a concern with Turner. But I love that stat that you provided, and when he does get the ball, that he's able to score. The blocks are going to be there. He could potentially be a 1.5 threes, 2 blocks per game sort of a guy if he can get to even 15 points per game and 7 rebounds, and that jumps him up considerably. But I do have a concern with Turner for this coming season. We saw how well Sabonis played at times last season, and I still think that Turner's a better player and a considerably better prospect than Sabonis, but they also brought in another center in Kyle O'Quinn. So that puts a further squeeze on those minutes unless they're committed to giving either, you know, Sabonis minutes at power forward a lot more, or they're not going to play O'Quinn. So how does that work in terms of the concern that, you know, maybe they are looking at potentially even limiting Turner further? Is that a real concern?
Not at all. They talked about in their postseason press conference next season they want more of a focus on playing Sabonis and Turner together.
Yep.
I think the exact quote was almost 25 minutes a game, and that's, you know, a solid amount of time on the court together during the game. And it was, you know, Sabonis didn't even play 25 minutes in a game last season, like on the whole year. That's a considerable part of the game, and I think that experiment's going to hurt Thaddeus Young's minutes. If anything, he's an expiring contract anyway, and I know he's a very solid player, like not a solid fantasy player, but more of a solid real life contributor. But I think they're going to focus on trying to see what they have in the fit between Sabonis and Turner, and then have O'Quinn be like the third big or the fourth big behind those two and Thad Young. But at the same time, I think they're going to start the year and try to give TJ Leaf a couple minutes, and he's going to do terrible, and then they're going to immediately stop trying to do that. So maybe at the start of the year, I think Sabonis might be more of in that backup five realm that he was last year. But I think as the year goes on, he will actually blend into more of a power forward role, which won't hurt Turner's minutes as much. And then O'Quinn's there in like a little bit more substantiated Al Jefferson role to be like the stopgap when centers get hurt, because centers always get hurt, and to just, you know, fill in for a few minutes a game, because if those two are playing together, you're going to need someone to do that.
those two, Turner and Sabonis, played 300 minutes together last season. They were a negative 2.2 in that time, according to NBA Wowie. I'm not really sure I understand the Sabonis at power forward stuff. He played exclusively power forward in Oklahoma City, struggled. Obviously, he's a different player. Yeah, he has improved, but you know, clearly thrived as a center. And Nate McMillan was talking about that even throughout last season. Oh, we want to play him together. It never really eventuated once Turner got back. But yeah, again, you're just harping on about this same point about playing them together. I'm not sure it's the best use of Sabonis' talents, but if that's the way they want to go, that's the way they want to go. But they've also got guys like Doug McDermott, whose best position probably is at the four as well, rather than at the three, where he can at least provide some level of defensive, I'm going to say resistance, but that's probably not the right word I want to use with McDermott. So that's an interesting mix. How do you feel about Sabonis at the four? Do you think that that is his best position? Is that a disaster in some point, his lack of the deep shooting? How does that fit for you?
You know, I don't know if you have this value in front of you, but I actually tweeted this a few days ago. A big important fact for them is there's a lot of Pacers stats from last year, really, is the confounding variable is always Lance Stephenson, because those two, like you just said, they were negative when they played with Lance, but without Lance, I think it was 212 possessions, they were a plus 5.2 net rating. So it actually worked when they had like actual NBA players on the court with them. The point on offense for Turner and Sabonis, I somehow couldn't say their names just now. Sabonis can play, 10 feet and in and set all the screens and keep the ball moving around. And Turner can play kind of that modern stretch four. He's a better 3-point shooter and actual floor spacer because he's willing to let it fly from the outside, which is just as important as the making. And I think that they could work in that realm and, just have Turner cutting beyond the line. And things like that will be huge. Meanwhile, defensively, you have Turner's rim protection, which is great, and you want him down there all the time. So he can play the center on D, but then Sabonis cannot play the four on defense. And that's where the problem really lies with playing them together, is neither of them can defend in space. So you're kind of stuck on that end of the floor, and you're really hoping the offense can be propped up. And as it stands, I'm not sure the offense can be good enough. And I think it could get there, but it's going to be troublesome. And on the defensive end, or one could defend in space, and that could prop up the group. But again, I don't think either of them are there yet or ready to work on that skill. So I don't know if it can be anything better than maybe neutral in heavy minutes, but you have to try and see what it is, just given the way this roster is constructed with veterans and young guys.
Yeah, so it is going to be interesting. Like, I'm excited for Turner. I think that in terms of fantasy, he can wildly swing. He could take big steps forward, and he can play some extra minutes, because his minutes actually went down last season as opposed to the 16-17 season. He could see that usage spike. He could become a real threat as a top 50, top 30 type of guy even. But it also could go the other way if he does struggle again. He has had multiple injury concerns across his three NBA seasons, concussions, elbow issues, ankle issues, a few things, and that's can be a problem there. And if that starts to rear its head, we have Sabonis and O'Quinn who can step in, and maybe that puts a cap on what he can do. So he is an interesting one who's sort of bang on, where you want to draft him, but it could go really well, it could go sour in terms of value from that spot. So he will be someone for us to pay attention to. Now I want to take a swing into a different direction here, Tony, and just talk quickly about the two-way guys on this team. Edmund Sumner, he's back for a second year. He barely played last season as he recovered from a knee injury. And they also brought in CJ Wilcox, but I mainly want to talk about, the Pacers, theory or their rationale behind the use of the two-way guys. Many teams, especially like the Clippers, used it extensively. Other teams barely used the two-way slot at all. How did this team utilize their two-way positions last season, with, of course, Sumner being an exception considering he barely played because of that knee?
Yeah, I'll start with Sumner, even though you just kind of skipped right over him. They really signed him to a two-year two-way because I think they kind of believe in him long-term, and they wanted the first year to be a recovery year. Like you said, he got in that one game. It was the last game of the season, scored a bucket at the end of the year. It doesn't matter. He's not going to play much at all. I think they're hoping he can develop into something and maybe be like the end of the rotation point guard next year. But the addition of Aaron Holiday, who we'll talk about later, pretty much puts him as the seventh or eighth guard on the team. And there's just no way there's a role for him. But last year, their two-way slots, they started off with Sumner and Alex Poitras, who just received another two-way. And Poitras was probably too good for a two-way, but not – he's like in between in the NBA. I feel kind of bad for him because he's not really an NBA-level player. But – when they had, Damian Wilkins was their backup three to start the year, Poitras was actually sometimes needed when Bojan, needed some time off in his one game injury in December. And when Wilkins didn't have it, they actually needed Poitras to play that in a kind of backup three, backup four role. And He played for a bit on his two-way, and then they gave him a rest of the season contract, and then they brought in Ben Moore with their other two-way. And Ben Moore didn't play much, only 9 total minutes. But his G League stats were phenomenal, so he kind of, quote-unquote, earned it, I would say. But he didn't play at all, so you know they didn't really use it a ton. He was at a lot of practices, though. I think he used most of his days practicing with the pro team. But they don't use them for contributors. They kind of use them to see what they have with guys who are in their G League. Last year they did. But I think with Wilcox this year it's going to be different because I have a theory for the Wilcox signing, and that's that it's Tyreke Evans' insurance because, you know, like I said, he averages under 60 games played per season in his career. He gets hurt all the time. You bring in C.J. Wilcox, who has had an atrocious NBA career, especially compared to being a first-round draft pick, but at least you know he can play in the NBA and not do, like, just so off. Like, he probably is a Lance-level impact guy, which is bad, but, I mean, it's fine for a two-way guy who's going to just plug and play for a few minutes for injury. So I think they're going to use Wilcox as a contributor if Tyreke gets hurt, but that's just a guess. I'm not really sure what the plan with him is at this point in time.
Let's go to a different direction here. I want to ask you about something that's, you know, the national media doesn't always cover every team with the same level of fervor as they do as others, and maybe the paces are down a little bit lower there. What's a, if there is one, what would you say is a misconception or a myth that surrounds this team that, you know, you as someone who follows the team closely would understand and would maybe not necessarily cringe at, but look at and go, yeah, that's not actually true about how this team plays.
Some people say they play fast because they have a lot of fast guys, but they're really a slower paced team. I want to say they're in the bottom half of the league in pace last year, maybe even bottom 20, 23rd. They don't really get up and down despite being a high steals, high blocks team. They really take their time with methodical offensive possessions. A lot of people seem to think that Bojan Bogdanović and Darren Collison are bad defenders when they are just kind of bad defenders, but that's more of a just you're too lazy to watch a team thing. But yeah, it's mostly just like how they play kind of stuff. Like on paper, their stats look a lot different than what they are. Like they're the 9th best 3-point percentage team, so you think they're a good 3-point shooting team, but they just don't take that many threes. Things like that. I mean, they're really just their game doesn't reflect their paper as much as a lot of teams do, I feel like.
They're a team that doesn't get to the free throw line very often as
ever.
Well. And as you mentioned, pace, you know, only 97 possessions per game last season, which isn't very much at all. Other teams are going at 101, 102. So they're on the lower side in terms of their pace, which does have an impact for fantasy. An extra, you know, 5-6 possessions per game. It can be impactful, especially for these guys, you know, they're playing the bulk of these minutes. It might be an extra half a block. It might be an extra half an assist per game. That can have an impact over those 5 to 6 possessions that some other teams get, that the Pacers don't necessarily get. Now, this isn't a team, Tony, that changed very much in terms of their coaching or their personnel, but is there anything that you can see in terms of how this team may change its playing style for this coming season, whether that's any assistant coach changes, philosophy changes for McMillan, the addition of Tyreke Evans? Is there any change to how they could potentially look over the course of this coming season?
I think two things are to look at, and they kind of go hand in hand. John Schumann wrote about the 1-team-1 stat 2 summers ago for the Pacers. It was that they were bottom 5 in 3-point attempts, but top 5 in 3-point percentage. Last year, they were bottom 5 in 3-point attempts and top 10 in 3-point percentage. So it seems like every year they are a team that shies away from the 3, unless they're open, but they knock them down when they take them. But I think Kevin Pritchard wants to put more of a point on taking those shots. You can tell, you know, Evan shot over 40. Did he close to 40%? Over 40%? Yeah, 39.9% last year from 3. Yeah, McDermott is Doug McDermott. He's a bomber from downtown. And O'Quinn is not a shooter, but they don't want him to shoot threes. But they really added shooting at every position and got rid of their absolute worst 3-point shooter in Lance Stephenson. Sorry, I keep saying negative things about him.
I'm not sorry. I'm here for all Lance slander at all times, so I'm happy you keep bringing his name up.
Great. Yeah, I'll keep it up then. It's fun for me too. So I think they are going to put more of a focus on the outside shot this year. I think that's something Kevin Pritchard would like McMillan to go for. You know, maybe cut down a few of those mid-rangers that they so loved last year and turn them into shots beyond the arc. And I think a second thing, McMillan said in his postseason presser that they were going to look for a stretch four in free agency. And then Thad Young opted in, which I don't know what they thought was going to happen with that, but I kind of thought it was obvious he would opt in. But anyway, Thad Young is not a stretch four. He had one good year shooting the three for them 2 years ago, but his career is more of an inside guy. So I think they might try more of Bogdanović or McDermott at the four a little bit. Like you mentioned earlier, he's better on that end on defense at the four. So I think you're going to see some more clever lineups with wings at the four just to get more of that stretch four and more shooting on the court surrounding their new slasher with Tyreek and, of course, their already good driver and slasher, Victor Oladipo. I think that, you know, I don't think it'll be a ton of minutes because, like I said, they're trying to place Sabonis and Turner together a lot, but I think that they will go for that more than they did last year, and it could change their style quite a bit. I mean, it's just more spacing, which is how the NBA is going.
Of course, Tyreek is that guy who can play at the one, he can play at the two, he can play at the three as well, so it does give them that flexibility. He can play alongside Oladipo and Collison and push Bogdanovic and McDermott to the four there as well. In terms of Tyreek, he was obviously fantastic last season, played 31 minutes a game for the Grizzlies, only 52 games, but you've referenced that stat about him playing under 60 or averaging under 60 games. Last year, it wasn't really because of an injury. It was because the Grizzlies sent him home to be traded, didn't trade him, and then he came back, and then he cracked the shits and didn't play, and then they set him out with an unspecified bullshit injury. So he didn't play after the All-Star break. He played like two games with some sort of fake injury that they had out there for him. So I don't think we had too much to worry about. He is also, I think, 2 and 2.5 years removed from his latest knee surgery. He went through a stretch where he had 3 knee surgeries in 9 months. He went, this is not good. This is not great for his career. But we're talking 2 years, 2.5 years since that last surgery. So that's all looking good, fingers crossed. In that respect, Nate, that role he had for Memphis, the 31 minutes per night, it's going to be pretty hard for him to get that sort of role here with Indiana. I expect him to play less than that. But can he? You see him stepping into more of that Corey Joseph role we saw last season, where he'd share the court at times with Darren Collison. He'd play minutes in the high 20s, and that's really going to be a negative impact, I think, there on Joseph. But is that what Tyreek is going to be stepping into, do you think, for this coming year?
My guess is he is in the Corey Joseph role and that he's the first guard off the bench. And I think you're absolutely right. Joseph's minutes will take a hit in lieu of Evans. But I think his role, quote unquote, off the bench will be more of the Lance mold. And I think they're going to try to force him to be backup two as much as possible and just be the creator when Vic's on the bench. But at the same time, like you said, I think they have so much more versatility with the fact that Evans can play 1, 2, or 3. And if they need him to play, in for Bogdanovic, maybe Bojan's minutes or McDermott's minutes take a hit that night. And if they need him to play the one, Collison and Joseph's minutes take a hit that night. And this has to be frustrating for you fantasy guys, but McMillan loves to just like not at all reveal what his closing lineup is until like 2 minutes before it's happening. And they just close the game with different groups all the time. And it seems like he's really good at getting the right group, but you just have no idea who it's going to be. He closed with Joseph a lot last year. He would occasionally close with Lance at the three, and I know it worked well in one game in particular against the Pistons. So it's hard to project with a guy like Tyreek, especially exactly what his closing the game role is going to be. But I feel like personally, with the way him and Vic's offensive skills complement each other, and I think Tyreek's a pretty underrated perimeter defender, I think he's going to close a lot of games. But I'm not really sure what position that's going to be at, because McMillan is so not transparent at all with what that group's going to be. So I'm with you that his minutes will not obviously be at 31, but I think 28 is not unreasonable to think for him. Considering he'll be not the first option like he was in Memphis, his efficiency could be about the same. So I think he's going to play a lot, and I agree with you that Joseph's the guy that's going to take most of the hit there.
So Tyreek's a guy that barely missed out on the top 40 last season for fantasy, ended up as the 41st ranked player. I don't think he'll get to that level, but currently on Yahoo, in terms of his rank, he's ranked outside the top 100, so he's still got a tremendous amount of value for this upcoming season, I believe, and I think he should comfortably be a top 100 guy, probably a top 70 guy, even with a couple of drops down in minutes, and even assist rate, because he handled the ball. He was the point guard in Memphis, and he'll have some of that responsibility, but there is Oladipo, there is Collison, who still have the ball in their hands as well. So he probably won't get the 7 assists per game that he was getting for big stretches of last season, but still will be basically what Tyreek's always been, a solid rebounder, a solid assist guy, pretty similar to what Victor Oladipo has been through a lot of his career in terms of those rebound assist combination numbers, getting 5 of those each per game. I think Tyreek's going to be able to do that again for this upcoming season as he heads to another team and tries to build on a really strong year that we had, that he had last season, and push this Pacers team a little bit further forward than where we had them last year. Let's talk about the next question that I went through and asked all you guys, Tony, and that is, who is the player on this team most likely to be traded? You answered with Domantas Sabonis. Why?
Because I think that they would, in theory, they would like a stretch four or depth on the wing. And I think that he and Turner are superfluous together. And I don't know that they're actually looking to trade him at all, but I think he's the most likely, just that he has the most value if they are trying to upgrade those positions for a long-term guy. And, you know, I think if you're the outside perspective, you'd say, oh, they have three starters who are expiring contracts and good players. Like, those guys are all likely to be traded. But at the same time, they are all much more important to the team's success than Sabonis. You know, Collison's floor spacing and creation is massive. Bogdanović, you know, you saw game three of the playoffs against the Cavs last year. He's massive for them. Thad Young is, I think, one of the most top five underrated actual NBA players, not fantasy again, actual NBA players in the league. And I don't think they want to trade any of those guys. I think they're very important to the team's success. Whereas Sabonis, I think you could replace his production at least mostly with another guy, and he could return some value just because he's shown promise at the five. So I think he's the most likely to be traded, but I wish I answered that question with a lame answer instead. I think it's more likely than not that, like last year, they make no trades.
Yeah, and that's probably the case for a majority of teams. Sabonis is obviously a guy that put up impressive numbers. His ball handling, or his ability to get assists and pass, was really impressive, averaging two assists per game last season. He was the 144th ranked player in fantasy last year, despite only going at 24.5 minutes per game, mainly because of the efficiency, the nice free throw shooting, the solid rebounding. But one of the things that's always going to hold Sabonis back from being a great fantasy player is there's no defense. There's no defensive numbers. He doesn't block shots. He doesn't get steals. He averaged 0.5 steals and 0.4 blocks in almost 25 minutes per night. That's nowhere near, close to enough of being this, impactful type of guy. And this season, again, with Turner still there, maybe he does start playing 29 minutes a night and playing a lot of minutes next to Miles Turner. But I don't think that he's going to become some awesome option for fantasy for this coming season. But he does have that interesting skill set, that the passing, really, really good rebounder. If that shot does come along from three, there's an extra level of value there. Efficient guy, hits his free throws. There's a bit to like, but I'm not sure how much it's taking a step forward in terms of his fantasy production. But if he went to another team and found himself in a larger role, who knows? But yeah, I think I agree with you. The most likely scenario is that nobody does get traded on this team. In the NBA draft, Tony, they had two selections, Aaron Holiday at number 23 and Elise Johnson at number 50. Let's talk Holiday. I'm not a massive fan of Aaron Holiday. People who listen to this podcast will know that. Do you want to fight? We can go there.
Oh, no, you're a smart guy for that take.
Okay, but I'm not a fan. Didn't really love the pick. I don't see where he really fits into this rotation. Yeah, he was a 40% shooter all three seasons at UCLA. Didn't actually translate that across to Vegas, where he didn't shoot very well at all. I just don't see where he's really fitting in. Yeah, behind Tyreek, behind Collison, behind Corey Joseph. Is there any reason that he's going to be a part of this rotation this season?
Aaron Holiday is playing major minutes this year. He is either really good or the team is very injured, because A, rookie point guards are terrible, and B, Aaron Holiday is like the fifth or sixth guard in the rotation. So there's no reason that he should ever touch the court. And if he does, if you want to reflect on his college stats, outside of that shooting that you already mentioned, he was a high turnover guy. He's not a great defender, so it's going to be hard to keep him on the court. There's just not a lot of promise for him, and from a fantasy perspective, that A, he'll play at all, or B, that he'll even have enough of an impact to stay on the court when he does play. So I think his role will be very, very, very diminished this season.
He is a guy, though, that was able to generate some pretty decent assist numbers and some decent steal numbers, even in summer league. Yeah, that was impressive there. But again, I just don't see it from him as a long-term player. Do you think the Pacers at any point view him as maybe a future starter? I just don't see it for him.
I think they kind of have to, given that they have two expiring contracts at point guard. They're kind of hoping he could step up next year. Because of the Turner extension might make the team expensive. And maybe they sign a guy to play on top of him, but they surely view him as at least a rotation player pretty soon, which scares me, given, like I said, he's very turnover prone. He's not, he had a negative defensive box plus minus in college. Like, that's, if you can't be a positive that's defender in college, you're in. Yeah, it's going to be, it is very hard to do. So that does not project well for his NBA career. And, if he is a starter, I think that means he either becomes an absurdly good three-point shooter, or, some other skill that hasn't clicked for him already clicks for him in the future, which, with a lot of young guys, it's just luck, and maybe that's possible. But, looking at the things that usually translate, it doesn't look great for him. So I don't know if they view him as a starter or not in the future, but given the way the point guard contract situation looks going forward, it looks like they at least expect some level of production from him pretty soon.
You mentioned insanely good three-point shooters. That takes me to the next part of this show. As we look at the projected starting five, we've got Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Bojan Bogdanović, Thad Young, and Miles Turner. I want to start with Collison because he is an insanely good three-point shooter. He knocked down 47% of his threes last year. This is coming off a season where he hit 42% of his threes, which was coming off the back of a season where he hit 40% of his threes. So we're talking about a guy, Aaron Holiday, shot 40% from three in college 3 years in a row. Darren Collison's done that, and 47% is an outrageous percentage from three. He's a fairly good two-point guy as well, 50% from the field overall. Only 29 minutes per game, 12.5 points, almost 5 assists and 1.3 steals. But I do think that, you know, we saw the minutes drop last season. We saw McMillan use Corey Joseph over him at times. And yeah, another year older, he's just turned 31. Tyreek's there as an additional ball handler. While we do think Collison's going to remain the starter, and I agree with you with that projected starting five, I think that he might actually take a step back in terms of minutes played, even if it's just one or two. But I don't think he's going to push from 29 up to 30 or 31 where he was the previous seasons.
No, I don't think there's any chance he goes up. Like we talked about with Tyreek, the three positions means that if anything, everyone but Vic in the starting backcourt will go down. But Collison's floor spacing is just ridiculously valuable. And, you know, in, from a fantasy standpoint, of course, his three-point shooting makes him a great addition to your team. But to the actual Pacers, you know, him being on the court is incredibly important for the rest of the guys to succeed as well. And he even takes a lot. He took three a game, which, given that he's pretty low usage for a point guard, that's great. So I think he's going to remain playing upwards of 25 for sure minutes a game because he had so much value just by literally being on the court. I believe he was first in assist to turnover percentage. I really should know that still. Last year, he doesn't turn it over ever, and he's a solid enough passer. So, you know, he's going to play a lot. I think he might actually not dip that much in minutes as opposed to Corey Joseph, who will more. Just because he can space the floor so much. Like, he could help Tyreek quite a bit. You know, they could play together seamlessly. So I don't think he's going to drop as much as more than, like you said, a minute a game, but maybe it'll happen a little. But the production could go down just because he's on the wrong side of 30.
Yeah, that's right. We see these guys, and he's not a huge point guard by any stretch. He's a smaller sort of a guy, and many guys at that sort of age, smaller point guards, 31 years of age, do tend to take a step back. So that's a possibility with Joseph. Amazingly, last season, over the last 25 games of the season, Tony, he shot over 50% from three as well. So this was just a guy that was just red hot pretty much all of the year, which it was crazy the sort of numbers he was able to put up in terms of shooting. And he's one of the, I think he's probably the best three-point shooter in the NBA that nobody knows is a good three-point shooter. Like, nobody thinks, oh man, you've got Klay Thompson, you've got Steph Curry, you've got, insert whatever other name you want to put, Devin Booker. Like, oh, these are the best shooters. When this guy's hitting 40% of his threes for the last three seasons at insane rates. Now, the volume is not huge with him. He's not out there taking 8 or 9 threes per game. Only took 3 per game. Is that an issue, that the fact that he is so good and he's been consistently so good, why isn't he taking more threes?
Because it's not really his game, like, at all. Like I said, he's pretty low usage. And he's the point guard. I'm putting air quotes up. Classic podcast talk to put air quotes when no one can see you. He's the point guard in the sense that he is the shortest guy in the starting five. But he's not a ball handler at all. You know, he occasionally runs a pick and roll and jacks up some mid-range shot, but he's not really creating with passing other than just doing the entry pass on the offense. He doesn't have a lot of attempts because the ball's not in his hand a ton. It's in Victor Oladipo's hands, or they try to create through Sabonis in the pick and roll, or they try to, you know, have Turner do a pick and pop. You know, they have a lot of other things that happen before they try to get Collison a shot, and a lot of his offense is just spotting up, which is still incredibly valuable for the team, but for him, you know, getting shot attempts up, it's not valuable at all. So it's just his skill set really doesn't cater to him getting a lot of attempts.
He's also a weird one in terms of fantasy value. His rank on ESPN is 110th. I think that provides pretty good value. His rank on Yahoo is 66th. I think that's a disastrous bet to try and take him around that spot. So he sort of falls right in the middle there. So depending on where you're playing, he's a guy that you look in that 85 to 100 type of range. If you can get him at 110, great. If you have to take him at 60, then you've made a mistake. Because again, I do think the minutes come down. That low usage probably takes another step backwards next season with Tyreek coming in and his high usage and his ball handling. I don't think that he's going to go at 47% from three again. So if you knock 4 or 5 percentage points off that, it still becomes excellent at 42, but it takes away from his overall efficiency. It takes away from his three-point shots as well, his three-pointers made. And it does take that little bit of a dip there So depending on where you're playing, that's a huge, huge value range with a guy like Collison. You should be really concerned or, you know, careful in terms of just having a look at which site you're playing on as to where that value really lies. Now, we've talked about Oladipo. The next starter in that lineup is Bojan Bogdanovic, who I think projects at a fairly similar level to what we saw last year. Maybe with the addition of Doug McDermott, he sees some of his playing time come down as well with Tyrek. He played almost 31 minutes per night last season. Do you think he will take, you know, maybe a marginal step back in that playing time, or will they keep him around that same level despite McDermott and Tyrek both being able to play that position?
I think he takes a step back in minutes, almost certainly. You know, last year his backup to start the year was Damian Wilkins, who's not in the NBA. And then his backup was Alex Poitras, who was on a two-way. And then his backup was nobody, and that really inflated his minutes for that stretch after they waived Wilkins and before Glenn Robinson was back from his injury, where, you know, it was Bojan at the three, and then, like, Lance sometimes had it, and, you know, they just had no one really there. So we got a lot of minutes during that run, which kind of inflates his per-game averages. And then Glenn Robinson, the third, obviously came back at the end of the year. But I think his minutes for sure will take a step back because he won't have that run where he won't have that run where he's the only guy. B, I think, you know, McDermott and him having pretty similar play styles and that being a seamless fit means it's not as big of a deal if he's off the court like it was last year. I think McDermott can come in and not supply everything Bogdanovic does. You know, like I said, I think Bojan's an underrated defender, and he's a better dribbler than people think too. I think he'll still play a lot more, but I think McDermott helps, fill a void that they didn't have at the backup three last year. And then, like we've been harping on the whole show, Tyrek, just such a wild card. He can play the three as well. So yeah, I think if anyone, his minutes are going to take the biggest, I guess Corey Joseph probably, but I think Bojan's minutes do take a pretty big fall, probably somewhere to the 26 or 25 minute per game range, if I had to guess.
I've got him at 29 minutes per night currently. Wow. in my projections. Which is the same as Tyrek, but I could probably look at that as I go through and redo all this stuff and bump him down another minute there. But he was extremely efficient last season, but there's so many cases with guys in that shoot well, but for fantasy, they don't do anything else. Like, he doesn't rebound. He gets no assists. There's no steals. If you get one block out of him for the entire season, I think he'd be pretty happy. He doesn't get to the line huge amounts. He does at times when he's put into a larger role due to injuries. He can get to the line, but that's not going to be his game with Tyrek and Oladipo and Turner. Yeah, having the ball in their hands a lot more than what he does. So he's not a great fantasy option. His value is a little bit all over the place as well. He's ranked insanely high to me on ESPN at number 91, whereas last season he was the 124th ranked player. So I don't understand the rationale to expect him to be that much better this season when I and you, Tony, expect him to take somewhat of a step back. He is still only 29, despite looking like he's about 34. He is... He provided some really solid defense, I guess you could say that, on LeBron last season. So as you mentioned earlier, he's not as much of a train wreck as people think he is. He is solidly below average, which is totally fine. Enough of what he needs to do in that position. The other members of the starting five that you've projected here, we've got Thad Young and Miles Turner. We've spoken about both of those guys. Young's value in fantasy comes from his ability to generate steals as a power forward. He's always really good there. But as you mentioned, the three-point shooting is all over the place. He's had a couple of strong rebounding seasons when he was in Brooklyn, but never been able to rebound the ball at a high rate really anywhere else. So I expect that to be the case again for Thad for this coming season. He played 32 minutes per night last season. From what you spoke about earlier, I think you expect a fairly significant downturn in the playing time there from Young as Sabonis gets more time with Turner.
Yeah, Thad and Vic played a ton of minutes together last year, so I think they're going to still have Thad open and close. I think that they like him in that variety. But as they try to experiment with more stretch fours and more Sabonis Turner, I think Thad's minutes do dip to somewhere in the 28 to 30 range. And he's very consistent on a game-by-game basis, which is great for the Pacers. But for your fantasy perspectives, you know, his assist, like all his numbers should just take a tiny bit, little downturn as his minutes decline because he is the way that he is. So, his perspective should be on the bad side compared to last year. So I don't know what his average draft position is or anything like that, but it should be lower than last year.
His rank on Yahoo is 86th, which is too high for me. I think he'll struggle to be a top 100 guy for this season, probably struggle to be a top 120 guy as he does lose those extra minutes and Sabonis jumps in and the presence of O'Quinn pushes more Sabonis to the four as well. So I think he'll struggle. He has also seen, now, despite it being excellent, he has seen his steal rate drop as well. Not getting as many steals as what he has in the past despite playing more minutes last season. Actually, no, sorry, it's not true. His steal rate actually was higher last season, so scrap all of that that I said. His field goal percentage is what dipped last season, and he is an underratedly really poor free throw shooter, under 60% for each of the last two seasons, but thankfully, he just doesn't go to the line at all. Only one free throw attempt per game each of the last two seasons. It was higher than that in Brooklyn, but his game was weirdly different when he was in Brooklyn as opposed to what he is like now. We've spoken about Miles Turner quite a bit, so I want to go through just some other guys who I look at as your value and bust guys in terms of their ranks in fantasy. I think Victor Oladipo comes in at a rank of 20 on ESPN. That's crazy. I don't think he'll necessarily be the 10th best guy, but I think he can be better than what he was last, also not, he can be better than the number 20, so in that mid-second round, that's solid. I talked about Collison already. I think Miles Turner at 48 has got the risk of being a bust, but as we talked about, he's got such a wide range of outcomes that he could end up being anywhere in that list. And ESPN also has Domantas Sabonis at 86 and Bogdanovic at 91, and I don't see either of those situations being realistic outcomes, whereas yeah, Yahoo has Tyreek way too low outside the top 100. They've got Thad Young too high inside the top 90, in my opinion, there as well. Now, a couple of guys we haven't really touched on here, guys who are really some of the worst fantasy players in the NBA on a per-minute basis. One of those is Corey Joseph, who goes out there and plays minutes and does as little as anybody with those minutes from a statistical accumulation perspective. Now, we do expect him to suffer quite a dip in his numbers this season. He was, he played a lot last season. He played, 26 minutes per night or 27 minutes per night, scored just 8 points with 3 assists. What was your view of him in his first season with Indiana, and do you think it is the right move to cut his minutes as we expect to happen this year?
Corey Joseph is a good basketball player. He is a terrible fantasy player.
Yeah.
He is the things he is good at, like hustle and good to perimeter defense and cutting, are not – you don't get fantasy points for anything. Literally any of the things he's good at. So he's going to be a terrible fantasy player again, especially as his minutes decline. But I still think he's going to play because he can play the one or the two. On our show, we were talking about the best lineup that would have no Vic or Tyreek, and I think Corey Joseph is in that group for sure. So he's going to play upwards of 20 minutes a game, and I think he's going to be the second-best perimeter defender on the team. And I think he's going to be, okay as a spot-up three-point shooter, but he does not do anything with the ball. He doesn't ever handle it that much. He doesn't, all he does is run around on offense, basically. So, yeah, his role is limited. He's not a good fantasy player at all. So nothing will change for him in that regard.
Speaking of not good fantasy players at all, one of literally the worst players in terms of per-minute production is Doug McDermott, a guy that shoots well and then does nothing else. He cannot rebound. He cannot get assists. If he blocked one shot, it'd probably be his first. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't get to the line at all. He is just literally, he would need to play 54 minutes a night to be close to a top 100 player. That is just how low his accumulation stats are. Now, he bangs in threes and he bangs them in at a high rate, and you know that's going to happen. He just doesn't do anything else. He just doesn't get the ball. He doesn't have high usage. He doesn't do any of these things which equate to a good fantasy player. So even if for some weird reason he came out and they said, oh no, we're going to be starting McDermott over Bogdanovic, we really believe in him, he's playing 32 minutes and on, I'd still want nothing to do with him in fantasy because he just doesn't do, he cannot do anything. He cannot accumulate any of those other numbers. But in saying that, having a guy who willingly shoots threes at a high level, he can be a positive influence on the other guys around him. His defense does struggle, but when he plays up at the four, it's actually not horrendous in that spot. So I think his biggest fantasy value is being able to help out these other guys on this team. I didn't love the contract that he signed. I didn't love the urgency which they felt they needed to get Doug McDermott in there, but he can be a benefit to the other players in this team, Tony.
Yeah, the urgency was that they just wanted shooters. They were rumored to go for J.J. Redick, and I think they pivoted to McDermott as soon as they didn't get Redick. You're absolutely right, though. He's going to stand on there on offense, probably in the corners, cut up to the wing, cut back to the corner, cut back up to the wing. He's going to do nothing but shoot threes. People who I interview about him from the Knicks and the Mavs, say things like, oh, he's an underrated dribbler, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I hope he never does that ever. I hope he's behind the line the entire game. Maybe he cuts to the rim, every once in a while, which apparently he's pretty good at. I have some fun clips of Kylo Quinn diming him up on cuts, but I hope he just sits behind the three-point line on offense. And then on D, yeah, just find a way to put him on a guy who's either in the post or, like Thad Young can guard the perimeter. So in theory, McDermott and Thad could team up there, that they could switch on D and be good on O. But yeah, like you said, McDermott's value will be helping other guys, and he's just going to be a 3-point shooter for this team.
I was maybe a little bit unfair on McDermott. I said he's the worst fantasy player. Not quite there. In terms of value, fantasy value, if you put everyone's numbers out to per 36 minutes, last year he was the 457th best player. So not quite the worst, but not great.
Woo!
The best finish he has had in per 36 fantasy rankings was his second season in Chicago, where he was the 382nd best player on a per 36 basis. So he just is horrible. And he averaged a robust 3.8 rebounds per 36 minutes, 0.3 steals per 36 minutes, 0.1 blocks, and one assist. Just staggeringly huge amounts there. 1.6 free throw attempts per 36 minutes. Just doesn't do anything, but he does bang in threes. He's had two seasons of 43% shooting from three, and the other one there in his season with OKC, where he shot 37%. His rookie year, where he was destroyed by Tom Thibodeau, he shot just 32%. But once he adjusted, he banged in threes, and he will continue to do that. He just does nothing else. Another one of those guys that I talk about this on the show all the time, Tony, is when you're looking at the three-pointers category for fantasy, you can find it anywhere. You can go and add Doug McDermott in his 19 minutes per game. Maybe he gives you 1.7 threes. Bang, there's your threes. Nothing else. But if you want to add threes, you can just add him in. Hey, the Pacers play on Saturday. Where's McDermott? Let's add him. Let's get two triples. Maybe we get four triples in a breakout type of game where he gets this the extra shots going. And then you drop him off and you move someone else in. And that's because three-pointers, you can find them on these players who provide very little else. And Doug McDermott is absolutely 100% the poster boy of providing very little else. Now, if we just want to wrap this show up, Tony, by looking at a couple of last year's draft picks, TJ Leaf, you mentioned him earlier. He started out the season okay, I thought. Shot the ball well from three, which is a rarity for a rookie, but very Doug McDermott-esque. He did very little else apart from that and struggled. And a weird, one of those weird guys who's shooting 40% from three but can't hit his free throws. What did you see from Leaf last season, and where does he fit? Is there any hope for him to even be a rotation guy?
Nah, I think they want him to be because he's that stretch four that they want, but I don't think he is. Terrible lateral movement, can't play D at all. And you know, like you said, the 3-point percentage was good, but is he a good shooter? Like, he's not a good free throw shooter. If he misses one more three, he's below 40% from the outside. That's how few attempts he took last year. So you know, who knows what kind of impact he could have, but he did not show a lot of great skills. His summer league was atrocious. Things are not looking good for him in terms of playing much or contributing much. I think they're going to try again. I think they might try to start the year off with him as the backup four and see if they can get anything. But I think that they will punt on that experiment very quickly. And in fantasy, I think just stay away. Don't even add him as a streamer any day. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, there is nothing for TJ Leaf for this upcoming season. There's even less for their second round pick from last season, who did battle some knee injuries, Ike Anabogu. He only ended up playing a handful of games for this team, 11 games, under 3 minutes per game. Not really sure about him. Some of the advanced numbers really do like EK. Is there any hope for him this season? How are his knees looking? Like, where are we at with him? Or is this maybe the last go around in the NBA for Anabogu in his second season?
I love EK for some reason. He seems like he should be the modern big, right? Like, his two skills that he thrives the most at are blocks and lobs, which is like awesome. You got that good defensive guy who can catch lobs, but he can't catch the ball, which is a lob guy is a disaster, and he can't move that well. So yeah, I probably his last go around in the NBA. I mean, the potential's there, but he can't stay healthy either. So it's going to be tough. I mean, if he ever actualizes into anything, it's that he can be a very, very, very good defensive center around the basket, but that's all he really has going for him. So yeah, nothing really to look at for him.
No real hope for Ike Anabogu. I agree with that, Tony. I reckon that will wrap us up for today. I think we've covered off every Pacers scenario, every Pacers player, a team with a lot of intrigue over some guys, Oladipo, Evans, Turner especially. Sabonis, does he rise up? Lots of different questions to be answered with this team, with their fantasy production and with their on-court production, as a real chance has opened up for them to jump into the top four in the Eastern Conference. Tony, you will have everything Pacers related on Locked On Pacers. Tell everyone, first of all, anything you've got coming up on the show and where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, we're doing some cool stuff. We have fan shows right now, which we have listeners on to talk about what they want to talk about and how they became a fan of the team, which is really cool. A guy talked about seeing his first ever naked woman at a Pacers game on the show. So wow. That is Yes, that's dumbest
that is the
content.
Ultimate tease. I've never heard a promotional tease like that in my life. That is, I am going to download that episode because I don't even know how that can happen. But I don't spoil it. I want to go listen to that show. That sounds sounds incredibly enthralling.
Our first fan show, I got to look at the date so I can make sure you get the right one. It was the 15th of August, for those of you that gave. It was awesome. Gary was great. And then we're just rolling through some fun lineup stuff we think could happen, like today. Well, it'll be tomorrow, I guess. Show was the No Vic, No Tyreek lineup. So doing some of that evergreen offseason stuff. And on Twitter, I'm doing some fun Aaron Holiday stuff right now, and I just wrote about Domantas Sabonis. You can check that out on my Twitter at TEastNBA.
Go and follow Tony over there. Go check out Locked On Pacers. I'm going to be going and finding that episode straight away to hear about naked women at basketball games. That is merging everyone's two great loves, I'm sure. We'll go and check that out. Tony, thanks again for jumping on for your first experience with the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast.
I loved it, man. Thanks for having me.
Guys, make sure you are subscribing to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube. Hit subscribe, 5-star rating, review, leave me a thumbs up, leave me a comment. You know where to find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Go follow me there. Go check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. TJ Leaf.